My usual day job is helping develop open source communities, analyze business impact of open source, and deploy open source. However, my task today is to be the lightning round commandant, so bear with me. We have 12 presenters who are going to stand, introduce themselves, their companies, how they're using open source, and why you should care. And we're going to do all of that within 60 minutes or so. So you can imagine with an hour to do all that, the format's going to be pretty tight. And as Jay mentioned, what we're going to do is allow each presenter to have 6 minutes to tee up their elevator pitch at the buzzer, which is here. I'm going to ask them to finish their sentence, and then we're going to move to the next. And hopefully, the equipment logistics will be as smooth as possible. Because it's tight, I'm going to ask people to hold their questions till the end of our session. I'm sure the people here are happy to take those offline. So, without further ado, I'm simply going to introduce the names of the companies or the projects. And we're going to try and do this in alphabetical order, although some people, I think, are still having traffic problems. So we're going to try and stick with the program. So we tee up. The first one is Akaza Research. One, two, three, go.
Okay. Let's see how fast I can talk. All right. My name is Ben Bauman, and I'm the Director of Business Development at a company called Akaza Research. Akaza has an open source software application for managing clinical research in clinical trials. At any given time, there are about 80,000 clinical trials active around the world. In the U.S. alone, it's estimated that in 2007, about $27 billion will be spent on clinical trials. The portion of this funding that's applicable to OpenClinica and Akaza is currently about $500 to $700 million, growing at about 20% a year. The primary customer challenge is really to maximize the productivity of their clinical research operations. We've all heard a lot about drying up R&D pipelines, especially in big pharma. So there's increasing pressure for productivity enhancing tools. The market is currently served by a number of, or a couple of large companies and quite a number of smaller firms. All of whom practice what you can consider the traditional enterprise software business model. The incumbent vendor solutions are really, in our view, counter to the customer's productivity maximizing objective. For example, they're costly, costing typically hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to implement. In many cases, the products themselves are archaic, carrying high overhead, and built with heavyweight technology. We can consider a lot of these products to kind of have the silo effect and be largely closed to integration with other systems. And as a result, we estimate that these products are really also inaccessible to about 50% of the 80,000 or so clinical studies that are active. OpenClinica, on the other hand, is a better solution because it's aligned with the customer's productivity maximizing objective. The product is open source. So adoption is easy. The product's functionality and is the output of a large global community, so the product's features tend to be very on target. Of course, it can be substantially less costly and more flexible. And there are other aspects of the product that make it more interoperable, namely the fact that it's also based on the leading independent open standards from the ground up. From a business perspective, taking an open source approach with OpenClinica makes us dramatically different in a very conservative industry. For example, our cost structure is quite a bit different. On the R&D end, we get some very substantial contributions from community, from in most cases very large institutions. On the sales end, our distribution is made quite a bit easier. As a business, we sell something called OpenClinica Enterprise, which is a whole suite of value-added products and services for OpenClinica adopters. And some of these things include installation, validation of the software, hosting different types of training, setting up individual studies, support packages for the application for end users, and of course, consulting work. Our Open Clinic Enterprise, typical Open Clinic Enterprise contract ranges from about $25,000 to $250,000 and up per year. Some of our sample adopters and Open Clinic Enterprise customers are listed here on this slide. The product is still fairly young. It was first released to the public in November 2005, so a little over a year and a half ago. Since then, in our niche, we've had over 6,000 downloads and 1,700 individuals who have registered as community participants, and we feel this is very robust given the focus of the niche we're targeting. We were also the recipient in earlier this year of the National Cancer Institute's Embodying the Vision Award for their CA Big program. As a company, we currently have 18 employees and are cash flow positive. So in the short run, to summarize the value proposition, we feel the drivers are really cost, flexibility, and efficiency from the customer's perspective. In the long run, however, we hope to deliver upon a promise of data interchange and really allowing our customers to have seamless e-clinical systems. Thank you.
All right.
How long was that?
That was just under 5 minutes, so that's fantastic. I lied. I think what we're going to do, because SnapLogic is up on this computer, we hope. Yeah. I'm going to ask SnapLogic to come up next, and then I think we're going to go to Adaptar afterwards. Yeah. So,
let's see if I can. Sorry. Excuse me.
Let me reset your start.
Oh, but I can't see the clock in the dark.
Yeah, I can't either. All right, the clock's running.
Okay.
And there's the clock
Mike
if you need.
Microphone. I got to stand over here, do I? I call myself the chief instigator of this project. I think now I'm more formally known as the chief community officer. SnapLogic. SnapLogic is a project we started back in 2005. We released the code about a month ago. It's basically an open source data services framework. Why are we going? I'm sorry. This is going backwards there. It's an open source data services framework, and our goal is to provide a better solution to the open. Okay, guys. It's on auto, I guess. I don't know why it's jumping ahead. So the goal is to provide a data services framework as an open source infrastructure. The basic problem we're solving is this issue that data access and transformation is still a problem across the industry.
You can see it over there.
And the current solutions have a lot of their roots in the client-server era. A lot of them come back from the 1990s and the late 80s, whereas, you know, we've moved ahead and it's now 2006. The other issue is we're seeing a case where the notion of web services in the general sense, outsourcing of services, outsourcing of applications, is driving data off outside the data center onto the LAN, and that's making the challenges more severe. Who? It's a combination of internet and data integration people. I've worked in the data warehousing business analytics space for about 12 years. In fact, I used to work just down the road here in Waltham. Then I moved to California to join Informatica and kind of go through the whole rise of the data warehousing industry. I hooked up with Chris Marino, who was the founder of Resonate back in the 1990s. It was the original internet server load balancing technology on the internet. And together, our financier has been Gaurav Dhillon, who was originally the founder of Informatica Corporation, and he's now running a venture capital organization funding some early Web 2.0 type startups. The basic project is oriented around a data services framework. What we do is take data and expose it very simply as an HTTP endpoint. This allows people to create data transformation endpoints, and we also allow people to cascade data into pipelines of data so that you can successively reuse and transform data through a pipeline. In order to do this, we've based the whole system on a REST architecture, and a resource modeling approach, which is very different to client-server. It's technology that's much, much closer to the nature of the internet. Design goals were to make the system scalable, extensible by an ordinary developer, not by the vendor. We really try to help people, or the intent is to make the system easier to use than writing a custom program for every data interface you have to build. Really, the target market is more of a developer than a business user. Most commercial or proprietary systems are aimed at a high-level business user because they're expensive. We're looking more at the developer, the sort of guy that writes PHP, the sort of guy who writes Python or Perl. That's really our target audience because they're the guys that do the most bulk of the custom coding. And we're also trying to bridge the gap between enterprise and web data by using a uniform access model. We can do much better in terms of giving consistent access to data. This picture here kind of shows the current problem. It's a very quick synopsis of what we're looking at. Basically, in the data access world, we have a lot of data APIs, ODBC, JDBC, proprietary systems, vendor-specific database APIs. We have files. It's basically a very complex matrix. And at each point, you have to convert from that unique format into a vendor format through some sort of transformation and back to the other format again. So it gets really messy. What we've done is gone ahead and tried to eliminate the issue of multiple access protocols, multiple schemas, and multiple access methods by basing things on web technology. So we use HTTP as the transport protocol. We use something known as REST as the basic resource or data modeling. And we take a lot of the complex data structures and we drop them down to a normalized table. Most people work with spreadsheets and record sets. That's very much the way we make data access work. It's a very simple rectangular layout, which simplifies a lot of the issues you have to do with your data. Applications for this, very broad spectrum. There are what I would call traditional integration, things like business intelligence, data warehousing, things like simple data migrations or conversions from system A to system B, often a one-time application. We've seen a lot of interest in the past year in the area that's called mashups. IBM has this interesting project they've been talking about. Rod Smith out of IBM has been working on this concept called the enterprise mashup as the next generation of applications. And one of the things you find is people want to build applications by joining data from two or three locations. And they're using the term mashup, but the problem is you can get to web data today on the internet, but it's very hard when you're in the enterprise to get access to a lot of enterprise data, and it's even harder to join that with web data. So we've had a lot of interest in the past year in this notion of bridging the gap between data that's traditionally been in the data center and data that's been out on the internet. I think since this was an open source summit, I think it was important to put at least one page up here on why we're using open source. We're convinced that the LAMP stack, Linux, Apache, MySQL, and some form of scripting language like PHP, Python, Perl, is really becoming the future of infrastructure. I think Red Hat has probably proved that. JBoss has proved that. Canonical is going after the server market with Ubuntu. So we've seen a big shift in that direction. The other problem is I personally am convinced, and I think everybody else in my company, is convinced that the traditional proprietary model is broken.
Time's up.
Time's up. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. That was a great job. I'm afraid I'm on this perpetual lying streak. I couldn't find the Adaptar presentation, so do you have it with you?
Yep.
Oh, great. So do you need to plug in? Okay, why don't, if you want to set up here, and I'm going to have the Black Duck folks start with their stuff.
Oops. Okay, I'm done.
Did I go? Any questions?
No.
All right, ready? One, two, three. Go.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jim Barrett from Black Duck. And Black Ducks, if I want you to take away one thing today, it's know your code. And the reason for that is that more and more organizations today are developing code using what was referred to earlier today as a mixed source model. So code is coming from open source, code is coming from third parties, code is coming from internally developed developers. And what happens is it gets all mixed together, and it's very hard for organizations to understand where all the components come from, and to actually clearly articulate what the licensing obligations associated with all those components being used are. We heard Doug from IBM mention earlier that he believes that 80% of IBM's projects actually include some open source in them. And Black Duck is a company oriented around helping companies understand their component software that's in use by enabling you to examine your code base after you've developed code and figure out what might have snuck in there that you didn't know about. So what's all the code that's available on the web today? Well, there are fragments, there are objects, there are complete stacks, there are services, applications, and so forth. And all of these things exist in and are very easily accessible today for download by developers. And despite the fact that companies have policies that mandate that disclosure of open source when it is mixed with proprietary assets be made, we find over and over again in our customer engagements that through inadvertent use, cutting and pasting of code, and so forth, oftentimes open source and proprietary code is mixed together in inappropriate ways that require people either to open source their proprietary code or to rewrite some of their code base in order to remediate whatever issues they might have had. So fundamentally, we want to help companies combine OSS with homegrown or third-party code that they may be developed and avoid unintentional things like copyright infringement or license violations. So what we do is we integrate as part of the development process and allow people to analyze or scan their code and figure out where their code looks similar to open source code so that it can be flagged and a detailed bill of materials can be created that identifies all of the components in use, whether they be third-party, open source, or internally developed code. Furthermore, Black Duck, in addition to being used as part of ongoing development operations, is frequently used in due diligence as part of mergers and acquisition transactions. So more and more acquirers are concerned about what is the actual IP that they're acquiring when they buy a software company. And I'm proud to say that Black Duck's been involved in something like $22 billion of acquisition transactions, either on a situation where the acquirer is using our product technology, or they've been working with a partner of ours who has used our product technology, or they've engaged our professional services team. So fundamentally, what Black Duck does is it helps review code that might already have been created through an analysis process that compares code in your code base with multiple terabytes of code that we've created in a knowledge base of open source code, and identify similarities and identify areas where there might be open source in your code base that you're not aware of. We have an example of a customer that we worked with where their engineering organization said that they were using four open source components as part of their development process. They went in after the fact, used our technology to review the code base, and actually identified that they were using 10 open source components. And obviously that was an eye-opener for them, and led them to understand that they needed to tighten up both their approval processes and also their review processes. So fundamentally, what Black Duck helps customers do is it helps identify what we've been calling a bill of materials. And it's shown here in a graphical format, which we call a code label. On the left, we're showing what percentage of a particular software development activity was homegrown versus licensed as open source. And then on the right-hand side, we're showing a listing of all the components that are in use in this particular activity. You notice that there's a lot of Apache components because Apache is one of the sort of more academic licenses and is more compatible with commercial code. So Black Duck's product portfolio includes three products: Protex IP, Transact IP, and Export IP. Protex IP is oriented around deployment behind the firewall and creating this and bill of materials that is constantly updated as new components are added to the code base. So that information is available to, say, customers. One of the things we see happening very frequently now is customers are asking when they license code, they want to understand what's all the code that they're getting, how much of it was homegrown, how much of it was licensed from open source, and what was it. And similarly, in due diligence transaction, that those kind of questions are asked on a one-time basis. Black Duck has a hosted product called Transact IP, which enables companies that are going through an acquisition process, either the acquirer or the target company, to review that that information.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent job. Next up is going to be Adaptar, and then are the Drupal guys ready? They're on deck. So you'll be on deck. What's that? Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to do that.
All right, how do I switch?
So ready?
Can you switch me?
Oh, sure. Yep.
Don't start it yet. I know. They will start the counter and then mess for 30 minutes.
Computer 2, no sync.
Oh, let me see if I can put the output.
Something's happening. There we go. Okay.
Yep.
Ready?
RGB.
What's that?
The second RGB for staging.
Yeah. I'll get you right here. All right. Ready? One, two, three. You're on.
Hi, everyone. My name is Rinat Kasanshan. I'm the founder and CEO of Apatar. And I'm going to tell you about a project we started about a year and a half ago after I met some of you guys at the Open Source Business Conference in Newton. And we released the code 4 months ago, and the problem we're addressing is data integration, the long tail of projects that never get built. The ROI for these data integration projects is too small to justify the cost of proprietary software and the cost of implementation. So we're going after the long tail of data integration that we believe has a big potential to explode, where the business users and not developers will be capable of integrating data and solve their problems that typically would not be able be able to get solved with an IT department. The shift we see in the marketplace includes that the previous data integration solutions relied on ETL, EAI, software tools like Informatica, like what Mike just told us presentation before, and they relied on a heavy parallel processing engines. Some of them cost as much as $500,000 for the tools like Ab initio. Today we see a shift in the enterprise market that the users want to get the job done faster, and there are plenty of projects that do not require heavy tools, but would be capable of getting solved with smaller solutions that can be operated by business users versus IT departments. We believe that the shift is going on with using the standards such as XML and REST and getting the job done with these tools. The trends that we believe influence the enterprise market is the shift to enterprise computing, with Google and Amazon building multi-billion dollar data centers. Someday we will all host some of our emails or applications in these data centers. The second one is the exponential growth of data. It's going with the speed that, for example, if today we have 160 exabytes of data, which is equivalent of, we can store, for example, Library of Congress 160 million times. And it will grow fivefold within the next several years. The third shift is virtualization. What we see is companies like AirPath, VMware, they're separating the infrastructure layer from the application layer. That allows enterprises get more for their dollar on the infrastructure and applications. And the, finally, the traditional ETL and EAI tools are too expensive to acquire and to implement. So we saw a tremendous opportunity at my previous company that I founded when I was 21 years old. I built it until we reached 100 people, and it still exists. And basically, it's a parent to Apatar. We solved a lot of data integration problems that evolved into a product called Apatar Data Integration. And it's a tool to connect your on-premise data with the web. Some of our users put on the forum, they compared Apatar to Yahoo Pipes, and they put on the forum, it's Yahoo Pipes for MySQL. Before I demonstrate what we do with the customers, I can quickly go over what Apatar is, how you can use it, and deploy it today. There is a website, Apatar Forge. It's a website for the community where everyone can develop, upload, publish, reuse, and share data maps, metadata. We're the first company, open source company, and I believe within the proprietary market as well, who decided to open source metadata. We believe that in addition to open sourcing source code, we can also open source metadata and let users get more value out of it. On Apatar Forge, we're going into see how it works by looking at the tags. And let's say if we want a metadata job done with Sugar CRM, let's say if we use Sugar CRM, we go and we select the data map that most appropriate for us to customize, and we can try edit this data map. When I click try edit, we have this data map getting to us from the website. And if I have Apatar client installed, it will automatically open this data map in a client and let me customize it. It will let me adjust it to my own business situation. In this case, we see connector Sugar CRM that we usually basically drag and drop onto the screen, and MySQL connector that we, let's say, have sales data in Sugar CRM, order data in MySQL. We need to join this data and move into the RSS. So
okay.
The RSS is available on the website, so you can subscribe through Outlook.
Thank you very much. And my apologies, I was calling it Adaptar, and it's Apatar. I'm a dyslexic engineer. The reason I chose PHP is because I could spell it correctly. So we're going to move on. I'll stand over here. We're going to move on to Drupal, and then I think what we'll do is switch to Simula Labs, because that's already teed up on my machine, and then Enterprise DB will be next.
Switching again. I think you switched back, so switch again.
That's one.
That's fine. I think that's what he's on.
I think you're on one. Is it two? Say, let's try this. This may be me. It's not that.
Problems?
I don't know. This has worked before.
We have a plan B.
We came equipped.
Check that up, please.
Let's just
Oh yeah, just that's a good idea. Just try that one here real quick. Sorry guys, we're supposed to be better at this.
Yes, no. Go to the fallback.
I think we all remember the scene in The Wizard of Oz. Disregard that man behind the curtain. That's what's going on now. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
Here's one.
Is it on?
Not yet. That's computer two. There's laptop one. This looks promising. There.
We need a username and password. Oh, we'll start okay. Without it while somebody gets the username and password. So let me start to talk about it. Ready? Go. Drupal is a project you need to know about because Drupal is a pure open source project. It's one of those community-based things that is just spectacular. Ooh, that looks interesting and funny, doesn't it? It's a completely community-based project that is really showing up badly on this overhead.
Jay, do you want to switch to Simula and you guys can...
Yes.
Why don't we do that?
Yes, thank you.
I hate to see you...
Yeah, because we're also, by the way, standing in for somebody else who's not here. So we're the stand-in crowd.
Wi-Fi, don't turn your machine off.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We need a connection to start with.
And I'm afraid now this laptop's gone into a coma. Does anybody know CPR?
Windows CPR.
Now, what are you doing? There we go. Getting closer. Does that look good?
Yes. Well, looks funky, but...
How about now? Okay?
Alright.
Now what to do? Try again. Oh, you only have one slide.
I do.
Oh gosh, that sweat for just one slide.
But it's important. And
but it's a good slide. Okay, here we go. You're on.
I'm Dave Schwartz with DevZoos, and I only have one slide. And the reason is I wanted you to know how to spell the name. And for those on the audio, it's www.devzuz.com. We changed our names. I'm going to give you a little history of who we are. We used to be Simulabs. For those people who didn't know Simulabs, you might have known Logic Blaze. You might have known Mergier. I'm just going to give a little bit of history as to why you should know about us, why you should care about what we're doing. I have some brochures in the back about our product as well as my business cards, so you can follow up with me. It's a short lightning round talk, so I'm not going to try to go into the exact details of the product. I just want to give some history and then talk about why you should know about what we're doing. So our background has been in open source businesses. Originally, actually, our management came from Glucode, which was mentioned earlier, which was sold to IBM. We decided to start an incubator to start multiple open source businesses. The idea being that we thought that there was a whole economic engine to be done around bringing open source to the enterprise. We started a couple of businesses which we launched publicly. Some were held back and still in research mode. Two were LogicBlaze and Merzier. LogicBlaze focused on the messaging SOA space. Merzier focused on the application development side of things. And the reason this matters is we looked at what was going on in the space, and we realized that actually they didn't need an incubator to form more open source businesses. There were plenty of large companies getting in the open source space, plenty of small companies coming around. And what we really wanted to do was focus on one that we really think is an opportunity for everybody to get huge investment from their open source space and what we want to do. So we sold LogicBlaze to Iona. So that's some of what was referenced earlier today as well. And where we are today is we've merged Simula Labs with Merzier, and we've rebranded as DevZoos. DevZoos, the name, the zoos part comes from a Swahili word, which means innovation. So what we're really talking about is developer innovation. That's our goal. Our goal is to make developers more productive. Now, at the same time, you know, developers have been producing things for a long time, and what we want to do as a company is say developers can be productive and innovative as much as they want because we're putting controls in place that allow the enterprise to really know what's going on, what's going into their system. How are we doing that? The way we're doing that is we're realizing that there's been a hole in the application development side. There's a problem with the standardized build and release of software. And for those of you who have been in the build side, maybe it's a little low level and you're saying, why should I care about this? It's the only point where you can actually know how this thing's being assembled. This comes into the process of repeatability, knowing that you can support this application and change it at some point. It comes into a compliance perspective all the time, because how exactly, what is this thing that I've made? How did I make it? Can I make it again? These things are critically important from a management and an executive level point of view. So we need the tool for that, and what we've done is we are actually a complete open source platform based on the Apache license, and we focus on the technologies that are coming out of the Apache Maven project. So what do I want you to really take away from this? What I want you to take away is that there's been a hole in application development tooling. You need to download Maestro from our website. Again, Apache licensed. You can run it, use it. I get phone calls, which is shocking to me, of people saying, I love your product, which is always strange. Because, you know, so many people have issues with it. The reason we believe that open source is the way to go with this is I'm actually trying to affect the way people have been developing software. Up until now, it's been, you know, build scripts and a build engineer, and someone just kind of hopes that when it comes time to release, it doesn't take more than 3 days to get the whole thing to package together and out the door. And anyone who's been involved in that process knows it can be a disaster where people are pulling their hair out and saying, how did this ever build before? How are we going to get this out the door on time? We have deadlines and issues. So what we're talking about is that you need to change from a source control system where you still need your source control. Clearly, source control is a key part. That part's all working. But what people have been doing is sticking binaries and components that they're getting from third parties, open source, and they're putting those with their source code. No one knows really how they got in there, what versions they are, what's going on with those things. And so you need to move those into a different class, a repository of information. If you are a process compliance person, ITIL would be the definitive software library, would be the ideas that we're trying to talk about. What is the tooling around that? How do you make that happen? How do you make it repeatable? So what we're talking about is moving binaries and components out of source code, put those into a centralized place, and then you can have visibility. Which projects are using which components? If I'm using a version 4.2 of some component and I want to move to a 5.0, I can see that 14 projects are using that. Or another question that people tend to ask is, how many different XML parsers are we running in our enterprise? These are the types of issues that, to now, you know, really have not been available to a management perspective. And what we want to do is bring that visibility and technology to people. So I think I'm wrapping up. I have a minute. So a little less. Okay, so in the last 30 seconds, the idea is if you're a developer, you should be involved, you should be part of the open source aspects. If you're a management, you should come in and talk to us about productivity improvements that you can get from your development. And if you're in the compliance legal side, we should talk about how you can enforce certain policies across your organization by build standardization and release standardization. All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Perfect timing. You got that, Jay? There. Nope.
I just may have hit the wrong button. Here we are. It's still doing bizarro things, isn't it?
Come on, it's not the Mac, it's me.
I'm
one of those guys that screws the thing in. Right. Okay, so after the Drupal folks, we'll have EnterpriseDB come up. And then on deck, we'll have IBM. And maybe we'll do that sooner than later. Do you want
to? We're going to have to just try it with this and see what happens.
If you're desperate, okay. we can put the project the camera aiming at your laptop, and that works.
Let's just try and see what happens. We may just have to have a bad display.
We don't need no stinking PowerPoint.
You know, we're not using PowerPoint, we're using web.
For the web.
As long as it will come up at some point.
Apparently Drupal makes your video output not work. Who knew?
That looks better. That looks what you had before.
Let me just move this over, and we'll do what we can. And you'll have to just kind of understand the fact that we've got computer problems.
You're not running at 1024 by 768.
Let's see. Yes, we are. I can try hitting about 600 and see if it makes a difference over there.
This is good
here. Hey, there we
go.
There
we go. Okay.
All right. So
the clock is starting.
Drupal.org is a thing you need to know about. Will you drive and take that over there for me and make sure it gets on? Drupal.org is just a thing you need to know about. It's a web content management system. By the way, I'm going to say that I'm Jay Batson. You met before. This is Barry Jaspin. Barry is a really great Drupal programmer. We're here to talk about Drupal, which is an open source project that started in 2000 to make building websites easy. It's a really spectacular, great thing. You can go to Drupal.org to find it. I'm going to actually have Barry go ahead and kind of give you a quick look at how easy it is to build a website by taking it to a real actual website and creating a page just to start with, and then adding a new field to a page, and we'll come back and tell you why other reasons why Drupal is really cool.
Okay, yeah, so as he said, I'm an independent software developer. I've been working with Drupal for about a year. Drupal and ours happens to be a website that I'm launching for. Sorry? Drupalinars is a website that I'm launching for online training, and we're using it as a demo because my computer isn't working. So, and unfortunately, I can't see what I'm doing. So if you want to create a new, this is just so you understand conversation later. If you want to create a new page on a Drupal site, for example, a fairly common thing is to create a story. Stories have, I won't be able to type if I hold
I'll
this.
Hold it.
All right, stories have a title and a body, and right, not this is, you know, if you wanted to run slash dot or something, you could say, right? So you create a story, right? There's nothing really very interesting about this. The thing goes up. Now it shows up on your homepage or however your site is configured. It wouldn't actually on this particular site. But now let's suppose you're a newspaper and you say, all right, you know what? Stories have more than a title and a body. They have a subtitle. They have an author. They have a pull quote. They have a list of images. They have got a bunch of things. So with Drupal, you don't have to write code to do that. You can edit your content types. You can say, let's edit the story type. And when we edit the story type, we can add a new field. Did I click that? I did. And let's add just a plain text field. Obviously, you can see there are lots of field types you can have. And we'll call it subtitle. And we're going to have some options, none of which I'm going to play with for right now because we're on a lightning talk. And you will not be surprised to see that if I now go back and say create content and create a story, that subtitle is going to pop up. Okay, great. So I just added a text field. Not very exciting. There it is, right? Yay. So what's interesting about this is, for example, as I said, this is a training site. And on a training site, you have seminars, you have instructors, you have scheduled sessions, right? So a general seminar exists, and then you can have one Tuesday at 3 p.m. So when you create a session, actually, it doesn't have a title and body at all. It has a seminar reference. It has a list of instructors that teach it. It has a date that it occurs. It's got all these different things that aren't normal content, normal title and body, And I created this whole infrastructure of related types through the Drupal content type system. So I have seminars and instructors, and it lists them, and it shows you what's coming up and all that stuff. And I didn't write a line of code to achieve this whole site, basically.
Why is that important? Because job one of web content management systems was to eliminate the webmaster. So you didn't have to have somebody who was the gatekeeper for the product or for content on the website. Job two is to eliminate the web developer. There's still too much stuff that you got to hire a web developer for to get stuff done. So let's just show you how popular that's been. If we hit this down here, just click that guy right there. It's different for, there we go. Just to give you some idea, this is compete.com's web traffic for five leading web content management systems. The first two are open source. Blue is Drupal. The second one is Joomla. The rest are Vignette, Alfresco, $200 million companies that sell web content management systems. They have no traffic compared to these guys. Vignette and Interwoven. Alfresco is another open source content management system, corporate-backed, not doing very well. Drupal is also growing really well. It's had 600,000 downloads in the last year. It's got 1,000 community contributors actively and about 1,800 community contributed add-ons. It's tracking at the same download rate as Ruby, though you don't hear about it. Next. Has got a very large active community, a great seminar called DrupalCon out in California in March. 450 people packed five rooms for 5 days at their own expense to do Drupal stuff. Drupal modules, there's a module for anything. You want an ActiveX plugin so that you can authenticate with your corporate directory, fine. You want a Dig or Delicious plugin, fine. They're all there. It's a very Unix-like architecture, small kernel, everything's a plugin. Next. Lots of Drupal users out there. Google's contributing $100,000 in Google code this year, Google Summer of Code, to Drupal projects. It's 20 projects. The next most project is 7. Jump to the browser real quick. We want to show you some real quick Drupal sites that are out there. Just click on the title bars of the, like here. That's right. Sony is using Drupal all over the place to create a whole set of sites around their artists. For example, Ozzy Osbourne, next site. Just click Ozzy. There you go, click Ozzy. Ozzy's doing a site that is using exactly the same infrastructure as, next site, Catherine McPhee. Click Catherine. And it's the same infrastructure, it's the same stuff, it's just all being done to create different websites. Next. AOL is creating their own developer network for people to use AOL code in their sites. AOL built their developer network site in Drupal. Next site. Ads of the World. If you're an ad agency and you want to tell people about the ads you're doing, you can tell the world by uploading your ads to Ads of the World. This is a Drupal site. Consumer-contributed content. Next site. Another consumer-contributed content. Forbes.com has a thing called Office Pranks. Forbes.office pranks.forbes.com. If you've made a video of pranking your buddy, upload it here. It's a YouTube for office pranks. Next site. New York Observer. Barry built this. It's a great, great newspaper website built by Barry in Drupal. Fantastic thing. Go learn about Drupal. It's the greatest project around.
Wow.
That's fantastic. I'm going to have to go take a shower after that one. Wow. Woo. Okay.
It's called a lightning talk for a reason.
Yeah.
That was
a super job. All right. Next up is Enterprise DB. And Andy, you need one of these?
Yeah. Can I just pop it right on top of here?
I think so.
It's going to take me just a second.
Okay.
Since I didn't. And you... Thank you, Dan. Awesome. Hi, Dan. Nice to meet you. Now, I'm standing between you and the most exciting project around, OLPC, so I'll get out of the way quick. The machine is telling me I have to pick up my glasses, so sorry about that. Okay. Good morning. Enterprise DB is an enterprise class database. Our objective is very simple. It's to disrupt the oligopoly that exists in the enterprise database market. Currently, it's an $18 billion market, 90% of which is controlled by IBM, Microsoft, and our very good friends at Oracle. So what is Enterprise DB in a nutshell? Enterprise DB is the leading Oracle compatible database in the world. And by Oracle compatible, I'll talk about what that means in a second. And Enterprise DB is also the world's largest Postgres company. So how many people have heard of Postgres? Excellent. How many people have heard of Oracle? Keep your hands down. Great. So what is Oracle compatibility? Oracle compatibility means that applications written for Oracle will run on Enterprise DB without change. That's not just the SQL syntax, that's not just the data types, it's the stored procedures, it's the packages, it's the built-in functions. If you've written an application on that was designed to run on Oracle, chances are it will run without change or extremely little change on Enterprise DB. Why do customers care? Well, customers care. Oh, and by the way, in addition to the applications working without change, your developers already know how to use our product. Okay? So why do customers care? Dramatically lower cost of the database itself and dramatically lower, extraordinarily small migration costs, because if it's compatible to begin with, there really is no migration. It's really a matter of you take your app, you point it at Enterprise DB, and it runs. In addition to the lower cost, a few people are a little dissatisfied with their relationships with their Oracle salespeople. I know it's rare, but it does occur. And some people are even dissatisfied with the levels of service they're getting. Who else is doing the kind of thing that this model is about? It was started by Amdahl back in the 1970s with plug-compatible mainframes to the IBM. The idea is basically we copy the API. We have no idea how your product, i.e. the IBM mainframe or Oracle, works internally, and we simply make a compatible database, and we do it on top of the world's most advanced open source database, which is Postgres. And we've seen the same kind of behavior by MCI when it attacked AT&T, by Dell when it attacked Compaq, and by Linux, frankly, because when a Unix developer sits down and to work at a Linux desktop, they know the commands because of the compatibility. We're also the world's leading and largest Postgres company. Postgres is a very, very active community, been around for 20 years. We have by far the largest number of people who are leading the project of any other company. But to be very clear, Enterprise DB does not control the Postgres community. It's much more akin to WebSphere's relationship with Apache, Red Hat, or Novell's relationship to Linux than it is, for example, MySQL or Sugar or something along those lines. We employ the worldwide community leader, Bruce Momjian, as well as several other core team members and committers, and we are the largest contributor of IP to the Postgres project. Why is this important? Because we are two companies at once. We are an enterprise software company with a proprietary product called Enterprise DB, and that's about Oracle compatibility. We are also the world's largest contributor to the Postgres project, and we sell support and consulting services to Postgres as well, although that's only about 15% of our business. Results, we've been in the market for 18 months. We've got about 110 customers as of today, including companies like Sony, Vonage. You'll see a press release in the next couple of weeks from FTD.com. Very exciting news there. We are embedded in all sorts of interesting places like the new mammography machines that are coming out from GE and from Siemens as the database that is embedded and underlying there. We have about 180 people in 6 countries right now. We've got a very strong presence in the UK as well as in the US, as well as in Islamabad, Pune, Hong Kong, and Canada. We've got a great executive team, which I don't have time to tell you about, but they come from places like Netezza and MicroStrategy and WebMethods and IBM and CA and companies along those lines. We've done some pretty interesting product releases. Our investors are Fidelity, Charles River Ventures, and Valhalla, and we've raised about $25 million. We've got about 1 minute left for me to tell you that Enterprise DB is a what we think is an unusual and interesting open source hybrid model. We bring the best of open source by behaving as a responsible citizen in the open source community of which we are a part. And we also add value to the open source project of which we are a part, and we sell that as a piece of proprietary software technology. That's Enterprise DB in a nutshell. Thanks.
Wow, 30 seconds to go. Thank you very much.
All righty.
Let's. I'm going to do Sugar CRM, and we'll get this one going.
So okay.
Okay. I think what we're going to do, because we have another laptop. Can I have the Sugar CRM folks go next? Because that one is on this machine.
We hope.
Yeah. Go, and I think you can just tap that.
Tap that. Okay.
Set.
Do I talk here?
Yeah.
Is that good? Good morning.
Fire away.
Good morning. My name is Kelly Bagley, and I'm from Sugar CRM. I'm the corporate account executive for the Northeast, and I also cover EMEA. Sugar is getting a lot of momentum in the marketplace, and certainly our name has been dropped a lot today, and that's very exciting for me. I'm new to the company. I've been with Sugar since the beginning of the year, and lately we have been opening offices left and right. Recently, as of yesterday, we submitted a press release that's been picked up everywhere. We have an office in New York City, a satellite office in Boston. Earlier this year, we had opened an office in Dublin and an office in Atlanta, and our headquarters are in the heart of Silicon Valley in San Jose. So Sugar, again, has been getting a lot of velocity in the marketplace, and we're excited about that. So our commercial open source product, as well as our open source project, has been around for about 3 years. So we've been in business for a while, and our name, again, has been just popping everywhere. Sugar has really been changing the way that people are thinking about CRM. Back in the day when we were just an infant, people were looking at proprietary software as an 800-pound gorilla, and gone are the days of $5 million CRM purchases and two-year implementations that just never take off. And slowly but surely, we've been morphing into a hosted on-premise type hybrid model. And Sugar fortunately has various different options. There's a second slide that I'll show you in a second, but when we start to think about total cost of ownership and return on investment and ROI, things that in the CRM industry have always been sort of myths, Sugar fortunately now can have tangible evidence against anything that can debuff that myth. And we certainly have a lot of customers that are experiencing ROI in CRM, which other vendors really can't say anymore. So because we've got such an amazing open source community of thousands and thousands of developers that work on our project, we don't spend any money on sales and marketing. All of our money, fortunately, goes into research and development of our product, which allows us to have that total cost of ownership and give our customers the ROI they deserve. So that's kind of a fun slide that just shows the morph of CRM. Customers love it. Competitors don't like it. I'm in sales. I love to show it. And I think that is a pretty powerful slide. Oh, a little automation. Exciting. Okay. So this slide is generally very confusing to 99.9% of the presentations I do to prospects, but I'm thinking this group, probably, I don't have to go through it as much as I would in a client environment. So Sugar, fortunately, again, has sort of a multiple deployment option. We've got three products, the open source product, Sugar Professional, and Sugar Enterprise. The open source product is free, and we have millions of downloads a year of that. The Sugar Professional product is a licensed product for a fee, and then the Enterprise product is our premier product, runs on Oracle. Oracle licenses are a little bit higher, so the Sugar Enterprise product is a little higher. The Enterprise product obviously comes with more features. We include our portal in that, as well as some advanced reporting and a little bit of light analytics. So, as with any CRM product, many modules are included, and that is sometimes overwhelming to a lot of customers, but Sugar fortunately gives you the option to turn off and on the modules that you want. So traditional Salesforce automation, traditional case management for your call center, we integrate with all of the major telephone systems on the market today. Case management, bug tracker, which is a hot module if you're a software company. We do a lot of work with software companies. Email marketing, campaign management, also included in Sugar's core modules. We have a very robust workflow engine. Business process management seems to be very, very hot topic in the industry today, so we do include a workflow engine, which is very easy to use, similar to sort of a Visio type environment, not a lot of coding. And the open source architecture obviously is attractive to everyone in this room today. We're flexible. It doesn't matter. You want to run on MySQL, you want to run on Microsoft SQL Server, you choose to run your application on Oracle, that's completely up to you. We support whatever. We're agnostic. Same with operating system. So whether you choose to host your Sugar CRM system in a data center, whether you choose to have it in on-premise, that's up to you too. So we kind of go in with an attitude of non-arrogance, which again is very uncommon in a CRM type atmosphere. So just a statistical slide about our company. We've been in business for over 3 years. We have a satellite office here locally where I'm located. We have over 100 employees. We have over 1,400 customers. Over 3 million downloads. Okay, so that's a new statistic that was slipped onto the slide I didn't notice. So over 3 million downloads of Sugar. So that's a lot. Thousands of community members translated into 75 different languages, 400 application extensions, plenty of money. Lots of people want to give us money. Lots of people want to partner with us. It's very exciting to be a part of a company that people want to work with. And then last but not least, kind of a fun slide, some local customers, Avid Technology, Athena Health, some big ones people recognize, Google, Yahoo. Our biggest company to date is Bayview Financial. They're a mortgage broker based out of Coral Gables, Florida. Their executive team actually sits here in Boston. Their CIO is here. $2.5 million deal, the biggest deal that the Sugar has ever done. It just closed this quarter. We're a private company, but they just did a press release, so I feel very comfortable talking about it. 1,200 licenses. Any questions, feel free to come up to me. I'm in sales. I'd love to pass out as many cards as I can today. Thanks, everybody.
Okay, thank you very much. We have IBM up next, and then SoftCheck. And is the fellow from Plone here? No, I guess not. So
he stand up to the heat of the
He left the room. They think there's a religious war brewing in the back of the room. Okay, so we have two left, IBM and then SoftCheck. So I need to do... Look at that, and I'm just getting to understand the hardware.
Oh, there we go.
You like that? Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
You want me to get out of the way, though?
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jean Barlage, and I'm a marketing manager at IBM, and I'm responsible. Thank you. I'm a marketing manager at IBM, part of IBM's ISV and Developer Relations Group, and I'm here today to talk to you about how you can make money using open source. Wasn't that question raised earlier today? Earlier this year, IBM launched an initiative for business partners that use open source through IBM's Partner World program. How many of you are familiar with our partner program? Okay. How many of you are members of our partner program? Good. Okay. Well, for those of you that aren't, IBM's Partner World program offers our business partners a wealth of technical and marketing and selling resources to help them be successful in the marketplace and to help them grow their business. And at the same time, it helps us strengthen our mutual relationship. So this initiative was launched in February of this year, and we're providing really three key benefits. If you remember three things from today, remember you can download free software today, you can get access to free technical enablement through IBM's Virtual Innovation Center. You only have to be a member of Partner World, which is free to join. And if you sell support for these offerings and or upgrade to higher-end IBM products, you can receive additional sales and marketing support through this initiative. WebSphere Application Server Community Edition pre-integrates with Apache Tomcat, and as I mentioned, it's available to download for free. DB2 Express C is IBM's data server. It's production ready. It's free to deploy, develop, and distribute. It also handles XML for you, and there are support for these offerings for fee and for purchase. Additional information can be found on our website, which is located at the bottom of the page, ibm.com/partnerworld/open-source. Just want to spend a moment on the Virtual Innovation Center. This is a source for IBM business partners to really get enabled onto our technology. It provides a wealth of information to help you do that quickly. For this initiative, it was announced in February. We have over 1,200 partners participating. We already have about over 400 partners that have GA'd on these products and are ready to sell. So next, now you got this great solution, now you want to sell it. Well, you can leverage some sales and marketing support through this initiative as well. IBM has a program called Sales Connections, and at the back on the table there is a pamphlet guide about some of our advanced benefits offered through IBM's Partner World Industry Networks. Sales Connections can help you close deals quickly, and it's available worldwide. This initiative also offers a free telemarketing campaign. The telemarketing right now is available in the United States, Canada, and Europe. And I'd like to give you an example. A partner right now just finished their telemarketing campaign. They leveraged WebSphere Application Server Community Edition in their open source solution, and they're selling support for it. They qualified for the telemarketing campaign, and it just completed, and it resulted in 15 new opportunities for them. So as you can see, partners can make money using open source. Through this initiative, we're also offering a market visibility package, which is, in a sense, an IBM press executive quote in your partner-issued press release. And there are specific eligibility requirements for the telemarketing and the market visibility package, which are also available on our website. So where can you learn more? You can go to our website, which is ibm.com/partnerworld/open-source, to learn more about this initiative. I encourage you all to join Partner World and join this initiative. You can leverage the technical enablement through the Virtual Innovation Center by creating an open source project by using one or both of these technologies. And if you sell these products or sell support for these products and your solutions, you can also take advantage of some of the go-to-market benefits offered through Partner World. If you didn't catch the URL, I have a one-pager flyer also on the back of the table for you to take home with you, and I'll be around if anybody has any questions. Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. Our last presentation is going to be SoftCheck. And
I'm not a venture capitalist, but I can talk like one, so we'll try to keep this fast. Okay, what is SoftCheck? Static analysis for open source. Where's page down on this Mac? There we go. Not mine. Actually, the easiest thing I can say is what Black Duck is to IP, we are to faults and vulnerabilities in Java code. So I guess I'm done. But static analysis, it's Wikipedia. It's analysis of the object code and bytecode in the case of Java without any programmer intervention. And it really is advanced technology and has come out of the safety critical and mission critical world. We've done work on things like the Boeing 777 flight controller in the Ada environment. SoftCheck is for Java. It comes out of the Ada space, but it's not your your father's static analysis tool. Early static analysis, lint, find bugs, were really designed for grammar and syntax. We're doing deep logic flow and call tree checking right down to the variable sets that and value sets that get passed across the code paths. We find defects, limitations. Why is this different? We'll run on 100% of the code path. Take 3 million lines of code, swallow JBoss whole, read the whole code base, and look for run millions and millions of checks on that code set. And it's critical for open source because you don't know what's in it. What does it do? It finds array index out of bounds. Numeric overflows, user assertions will fail. The other thing it does, which is very unique, is that it finds race conditions. Race conditions are unique threaded access in Java programs and where locks are not used correctly, not locked, or inappropriately locked, and that's almost impossible to functionally test for. We also find things like dead code and test goes one way. Very common in programmers to get an if-then-else statement, and the if is always true. The then-else never executes. You don't know what's in there. Can't be tested. We will find that. Quick diagram of what the engine is. This is about 15 or 20 years of optimized compiler engineering done by people who built the Ada compiler that runs the space station and the space project. So it's very deep from a technical point of view. Talking about why it's used for should be used for open source. As the gentleman from Fidelity spoke in the original thing, I need a throat to choke. Now, if you can't choke the open source deliverer, what you can do is run their code through the engine and determine that there are no flaws or crash bugs that will bite you when you run it in a commercial environment. We'll vet the code to make sure that isn't true. If the open source supplier runs our engine against that code, they can be sure that their developer, who is a committer in Kazakhstan maybe, didn't put something in the code that will either break it or might be malware. We can actually find and help vet code for malware. One of the issues with open source is delta management. Fidelity commented about this particularly. Fidelity happens to use a version of Struts. They call it Struts Plus. Okay, they modified it. They fixed bugs. The Struts project from Apache brings out a new release. What's happening? Did they break their fixes? Did they break their modifications? Did they fix the bugs that they fixed in the right way? Because we can do delta analysis at the logic level of the code, we can actually vet that Struts release to determine that it'll integrate with their existing code. Malware. One of the things that we have is a patent-pending capability for pre- and post-conditions and presumptions in the code. And that says that we can take a piece of code that you already know is good. You can give it to an outsourcer, or you can take a new version of open source, and when it comes back, we can tell you the functionality changes right down at the method level, the changes in pre- and post-positions and conditions and presumptions. So the programmer, the business people can look at it and say, hey, this thing will do something weird when it gets a minus one. That's not right. It's perfect code. It runs perfectly, but it's not good code. Why use it in open source? System-wide testing in open source is very hard. Open source projects, the committers and the meritocracy in it do an excellent job at their own particular level and at smoke test. But very broad, wide, heavy system test is difficult for that meritocracy to do. And so running an engine that is not people dependent, particularly when these people are volunteers, is a very helpful process. Cross-platform. Yeah, you want to test the open source on the newest release of Java, but you don't want to. What's our experience? We've run Struts for Apache. We've done some work with the Eclipse Foundation on the Data Tools project. We've done some open source efforts. Here is a real example of a piece of code coming out of an Eclipse project. It's open source, so I can show it to you. It's a classic programmer error where the subclass inherits from the superclass, but the test goes superclass, subclass, and it never reaches the subclass test. So consequently, that code never executes, and it's never vetted from a functionality point of view. What do we offer open source? Free project releases for free open source projects like Apache and Eclipse, special pricing for the Red Hats and Ionis of the world, who are open source deliverers with a commercial bent, and a free personal version to download. So why is it so good? Why haven't more people use it? It's kind of like the David Letterman's top, why did Paris Hilton not like jail? Well, we're so busy with our new release, we'll look at it after it's out and the bugs are in it. We ran against our stable QA'd code release, but it didn't find anything significant, so we don't need it. You know, it's like virus scanners who don't find viruses. I don't need it because I don't have a virus. And why do I need statics analysis? I haven't lost my job yet from the big bad bug or the company ruin the company's reputation. I will be in the back. Thanks.
Okay. I want to thank all of the people who participated in the lightning round. You all deserve a couple of Valium and a beer after that one. And I want to apologize to Ivan for running over, and I'm going to close up.